present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Telegraph, read by Neil Sleet.
A woman found with two gold bars hidden inside her bra was cleared yesterday of trying to launder the proceeds of crime.
And I thank everyone who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Francesca Martinez. And opposite them on my left, Hugo Rifkin and Susan Kalman. Jeremy, have a listen to this. One nation and we're on the moon. Nothing can stop us now. One nation under a bloom. Getting down this board. Jeremy, who wants us to band together as one?
Ed Miliband overused, to some extent, the expression one nation. I thought it was like a child saying poo-poo. Once is cute... Repeatedly, it gets irritating after a while. One nation. Yes, all right, I heard you, one nation. One nation Britain. I think you're showing off now, aren't you? One nation Labour. I think it's past someone's bedtime. Because he does this. He gets an idea about a new expression that he wants us all to use, and he gets carried away, and he tried to do it with a squeezed middle. And whatever happened to the British promise? Do you remember that? There was a week where he was trying to get us all to talk about the British promise, which sounds like a supermarket-owned brand chicken that's been that's been factory-farmed in a very slightly humane way. But he went on about comprehensives. I think to prove that basically he's in touch, and the implication being people who went to private schools are not in touch, which is an obvious swipe at Ed Balls.
He kept going on that we should all be one nation, but he didn't specify which one. And I was hoping it was somewhere nice.
Well, no, it's here, unfortunately.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Oh, I'm Barbados. So I thought it was
a very big deal made about how he learned his speech. I'm like, is this what it's come to, you know? Sort his policies. He's got really good memory. What have we learned? He's not a goldfish.
Yeah. He does look like a goldfish, though, doesn't he? But it's not that difficult, his memory feat, because how many times did he say one nation?
Apparently 44 times.
Okay, so he said one nation 44 times. He said comprehensive 158 times. You take out them, he only spoke for about 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, it's kind of like watching The X Factor, but speeding through the adverts and the recaps. The X Factor's actually only 2 minutes long.
But in that sense, he did come across as quite prime ministerial, I think, speaking for 65 minutes without discussing any policies. I think that's quite...
He also said, that's just who I am, quite a few times, and that's just not who I am, which he always does, which I always think must be because he's worried people think he's his brother. Although, actually, when they had the leadership contest, there was this really, really surreal debate where they were all sitting out their stalls, him and his brother, and Ed Miliband's going, but the thing about me is that I grew up and I had immigrant parents and they were communists and I grew up in Primrose Hill and really shaped me. And you're thinking, but that's true for him, too. He's just right next to you. What's he going to say?
But it's not a new idea. This one nation thing is not a new thing. My favourite politician of recent times, Sarah Palin, you may remember her, embarked on a one nation bus tour in America. And I just thought perhaps, and this was quite frightening, that Ed Miliband's been surfing the net and thought, oh, that Palin's got a lot of good ideas. And next thing you know, you'll just get a mega bus with one nation and Ed's face on it.
The irony of Sarah Palin in a one nation bus as well is if she comes from Alaska, she's got to go through another nation.
People bash America a lot, but I do think we've got to give them credit. You know, they do elect a lot of disabled people. Who would have thought they'd be that liberal?
Miliband did make a real play out of trying to court disillusioned Lib Dem voters. I think his main tactic was not to remind them that before the last election they were disillusioned Labour voters, which I think...
But it's actually Cameron's stuff now, because Clegg did the Olympic thing. Miliband upped the stakes by having, what are they called, the Games Makers, which sounds like some weird Dungeons and Dragons thing. He had Games Makers in the audience, and so how can Cameron possibly up, other than by running on in shorts and throwing a javelin into the audience, or setting fire to something, they're going to get a load of benefit claimants and travelling people... tied to wood, and Cameron will run on in shorts and torch them, just to celebrate the Olympic legacy.
Did you know I was asked to carry the Olympic torch 4 years ago, and I was like, how the hell has this happened? You know, we need someone to walk, carry fire in a big crowd. Where's Francesca?
Boris Johnson has today, in spectacular timing, come out and rubbished Cameron's economic policies in the way that he does just before the Tory party conference. So I suspect what Cameron will do in order to light his own flame is possibly set fire to Boris Johnson on the stage. And that, he would burn for ages.
Yeah, with that hair.
Ed Miliband has introduced the concept of One Nation Labour at the party conference in Manchester. Miliband's speech united the nation in thinking, I've seen him before, what's he been in? Miliband's official line is that Labour is now rebuilding Britain as one nation. This goes against the two-nation Britain line introduced by Hadrian in 122 AD. 2 points to Jeremy. Francesca, who wants to cut costs by cutting class?
This is a Tory's new idea of making schools 15% smaller. I must say, I hate my school, so I would have liked it to be 100% smaller. I think the Tories have misunderstood when people have said they want smaller class sizes. It's a bit worrying because kids are getting bigger. Corridors are getting smaller. I can't help thinking it's an educational blood clot waiting to happen.
If schools are going to get physically smaller and children are getting bigger, surely a lot of teachers are going to be wasting their time unwedging children in narrow corridors.
But interestingly enough, the education budget was $34 billion this year, and the military budget was $44 billion. And I was like, here's a crazy idea. Why don't we make schools 15% bigger and kill 15% less people around the world? I'm just throwing it out there, guys. I know it's mental.
We could have wars in smaller countries. Afghanistan is big. Yeah. It's got mountains and stuff. Belgium, you see, that one thing. Give the Germans credit. They knew one thing. Belgium is flat. The people are, you know...
Denmark, push over. When the Germans invaded Denmark in the Second World War, the only Dane who was injured was one soldier who shot himself in the foot as he ran away. So...
I think you're all being really unfair about what could be a really brave and forward-looking plan, because they just need to take it a bit further and cut school meals as well, so the children get smaller too.
Yeah. We could cut everything. Yeah. We could have textbooks could become text leaflets. The sports hall could be a sports cupboard. And the classroom pet could be a piece of wood on a string. I don't see what's wrong with it.
It is the corridors. It's extraordinary. They're not going to cut the actual classrooms, but it's going to be like mousetrap when you're trying to get the children out. But what they've also said is that there's to be no curves in a school. Yeah. There have to be no translucent ceilings. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds like a branch of Gap.
But they are guaranteeing that there's still going to be a bright and airy learning environment. Why not just put some tables and chairs in a field? I mean, it just seems this extraordinary thing. Bless him, Michael Gove. He sort of makes political satire pointless.
If they want to find more space for children, chimneys are the obvious place, aren't they?
New school buildings will be 15% smaller than those built by the previous government in an attempt to cut costs. Gove believes the cramped new schools will have no effect on their pupils, presumably because they're all poor and won't know any difference. In addition, perspex roofs and skylights will be banned, but children will be allowed to download images of the sun onto their laptops whenever they wish. Canteens will also be made smaller. This is as a result of the reduced cooking room required to make gruel. 2 points to Francesca. Hugo, which virgin has been given a second chance?
I do like this story. The government, they awarded the West Coast Main Line, which had recently been Virgin's line. The contract was removed from Virgin and given to First Group. And now they've had to take it away from First Group again and reopen the bidding process because they got their maths wrong by £410 million. Now, I think this is an incredibly positive story that I'm very, very pleased about, because I have this recurring argument with lots of people. I think I've even had it with Jeremy. People say to me, look, the Conservatives, They hate the poor, they're evil. And I say, no, 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 they don't, they're not. They say, no, they hate the poor, they're removing their benefits. And as I always say, no, they do that because they want to help the poor. And they say to me, come off it, that's nonsense. And I say, no, no, really, they do want to help the poor. They genuinely believe that, for example, a single mother on benefits with six kids, the only thing that's stopping her from, say, being the CEO of a multinational company is that she's disincentivized by the government giving her too much money. And people say to me, what kind of moron could believe that? And now I can say, the kind of moron that gets their maths wrong by £410 million. So I'm very pleased about all of this.
My first thought was, oh, thank goodness, Virgin Trains may still be running the West Coast service. That's just a wonderful thing, isn't it? No, it's just that I always associate train enthusiasm as synonymous with Virgin, so...
Patrick McLaughlin, he's a transport secretary just now.
This week,
This week, yeah. Yes. Up until
it might not be by the time this is broadcast,
no,
actually.
Whoever it is, good luck. The transport secretary, up until Tuesday, was saying, no, it's really robust. No, Richard Branson's just moaning. There's no problems at all. Because the insinuation was that Justine Greening, who is an accountant by trade before she became an MP, of all people would not have miscounted by £410 million. I mean, I don't know about you, but basic accountancy skills mean, you know, VAT goes up and down. I can understand how you might miss out a couple of pence. But £410 million, I mean, I've never not balanced my chequebook by that. I mean, I don't have that. If I had, I would say £410 is quite something. So Justine Greening's been shifted somewhere else. So she's had the nod and the wink. She knew that there was something wrong, but nobody told Patrick. Everyone knew there was something wrong, but nobody told Patrick. And they shoved Patrick out. It was kind of like eating beef burgers. Essentially, he was eating a train. They shoved Patrick out to say, no, there's nothing wrong at all. And imagine that meeting where they went, it's going to judicial review, and he was like, well, this is fine, isn't it? We're going to win this. No problem at all. This woman went, Patrick? It's probably something we should tell you. Now there's something very wrong with the bidding process, and you're going to have to phone Richard Branson and First Group and tell them, and then give them £40 million. And he'd be like, oh, come on! Get back here!
They made such a fuss about putting Patrick McLaughlin in place, didn't they? Oh, we've given a job to an ex-miner. Apparently, common people are wonderful with their hands, so we're very much looking forward to this. They're very rhythmic people, the poor, and we're jolly well looking forward to this. And then, and he's taken the rap, hasn't he? Do you think that's why they put him in place? So they can say, well, we've given the Oiks a chance, and this was a kind of mess they made. We won't make that mistake again, that's for sure.
I don't know how a bid can cost £14 million. I mean, who are they getting to write here? J.K. Rowling or...
Transport Secretary Patrick McLaughlin has cancelled the new West Coast rail contract awarded to First Group because of technical flaws in the franchise process. Apparently, there is the wrong type of government on the line. The decision was made by the British Chamber of Commerce, or BCC, who are very good at what they do, but very difficult to email. until all the confusion is sorted, commuters are advised to buy a car. 2 points to Hugo. Susan, who was made to look a chump on the stump?
This is about the US election, the much anticipated presidential debates, which are the first one was this week in Denver, Romney versus Obama, and there's great expectations about what would happen, Obama being a great communicator, as he's expected to be, Romney being, as many people see him, an utter idiot. And it was expected that it would be, you know, a bit of a knockdown situation because Romney's done some horrific things. His campaign has been falling apart. He's been mismanaged, misadvised. And so you thought, oh, this is going to be easy for Obama. And actually, oh dear, Romney came across as rather presidential and sensible, and Obama came across as just, he looked tired, he looked upset, he looked quite tetchy about the whole thing. And Romney actually, by all accounts, won the debate. There is a possibility that Obama was simply trying to lower expectations. He succeeded, I think. I don't think he could have lowered expectations more if he explained his economic policy through the medium of dance.
I'd vote for that.
Yes. So there's another one. The next one's on foreign policy, and everyone's saying Obama will do better in foreign policy, but he really does need to do something. And it was very surprising because, as we all know from watching the documentary The West Wing... They'll have been in training for weeks for this thing, and I was really quite shocked by how badly he did perform last night, actually.
Well, America should be wary, I think, of the whole live television debates, because we had them at our last election. Look what happened then.
It is very important, this. I mean, albeit, I mean, one has should have no illusions about Obama, because he's played more golf and killed more Afghans than George Bush, but the thought of Romney becoming president is absolutely scarifying. And you watch these debates and think so much hangs on this. I mean, let's say Romney, in the next debate, delivers some horrible chain of awful, clumsy, inarticulate, ignorant gaffes. People will vote for him. Because, unfortunately, that's what happens in America. It's not likely, because we've got deference. We sort of think, do you know what? I would like someone cleverer than me to run the country. Because this is what I feel. I mean, God help us if somebody only as clever as me runs the country. In America, they have the opposite idea. They think they want a guy who can spit straight, who can fire a gun, who can skin a Mexican. I don't want some fancy pants, college educated, probable homosexual, bright Harvard type running the country. They want a doofus, they want a schmuck, they want a schlemiel. And I thought what was interesting watching Romney, he was so, I mean, it was like watching Reagan. I thought, oh, you're doing the dumb thing, aren't you? You're doing that clever intonation, I speak my mind and it doesn't take me long.
I was so shocked though, because do you know the election campaign in the US is costing £3 billion? £3 billion.
Wow.
And I was like, why don't they just put that into the US economy and maybe decide the election another way, like, I don't know, who hates abortion the most or who has the least books in the house?
Francesca, it's the fewest books in the house. This is... I know you're new to Radio 4, but really, I think Obama just looked like a man who's... He looked like he wanted to say, look, do you want to run this country? You run the bloody country, because I'm sick of it, to be honest. I thought this was going to be a laugh, this. I was really looking forward. I thought, oh, do you know what I'd like to do? President of the United States. And do you know what? It's not all it's cracked up.
Barack Obama and Mitt Romney went head-to-head this week in the first of three live televised debates in the run-up to the presidential election next month. Romney looked assured and polished, having been turtle-waxed just before he went on stage. A snap poll on CNN showed that 67% thought Romney had won, 25% thought Obama had won, while the remaining 8% thought it was the worst sitcom they'd seen in ages. Barack Obama was born in Hawaii. Mitt Romney was built on the Death Star. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Francesca have got 4 points, but so too have Hugo and Susan. We start round two with a dispatch notice from the Amazon website.
We're pleased to report that your book, John Perry's Art of Procrastination, will dispatch sooner than expected.
Our thanks to Anthony Mann for sending us that. Jeremy, what rewarding idea is doing the rounds?
There's a report by the Royal College of Physicians and the Royal College of Nursing to say that they're not doing ward rounds properly. They're not spending enough time. Doctors and nurses are not spending 10, 15 minutes with each patient as they used to do in the days of Hattie Jakes. But they haven't got time. They've got targets to hit. They've got boxes to tick. They've got a massive throughput of people. Get them in and out of hospital as quickly as possible so they don't catch MRSA because of the outsourcing of cleaning, which has caused a massive hygiene breakdown in hospitals. They're talking about this holistic care. You need to have proper chats with patients. It's like a field hospital. There isn't time. You don't want the consultant saying, and how are you feeling this morning? Oh, doctor, I'm a little bit short of breath. No, I mean, how are you really feeling? I mean, do you ever wonder what it's all about? You don't need it. And they said that doctors tend to see the condition and not the patient. Given the shortage of time, I think leave the backstory out and concentrate on the actual medical facts. You don't want the nurse saying, Dr. McGregor, this is Mr. Bryant. He's a head teacher in Sutton, in Surrey, and his hobbies include classical music and watercolours. His parents, despite being both Scottish, met at the Festival of Britain in 1951. And then the doctor's saying, shouldn't that machine be making a noise? Just... maybe think about what's wrong with them as a priority, I would say.
Well, doctors are always so nervous with me. When I walk in, I can see them going, I've read about people like you. I know what's wrong with your brain. I did a show quite recently to doctors, and it was great because I could patronise them. Yes. And it's quite interesting because afterwards, this woman put her hand up and she said, look, it's my job to advise parents carrying disabled babies on whether or not to have an abortion. And I always thought that we should reduce the suffering in the world. What do you think? The room went quiet. Like this. And I said, well, if you really want to reduce suffering in the world, maybe you should have aborted bankers, arms dealers, politicians and Rupert Murdoch. I think doctors view disability very negatively usually, but I think the truth is, even if you eradicate all disabilities at birth, you know, people can still become disabled at any time, can't they? Like, look at poor Nick Clegg.
I was in hospital for a minor operation a few years ago, and I became instantly institutionalised because they give you a robe and you sort of shuffle about and everyone makes a fuss and you start saying, everyone's been so very kind.
My only real experience of NHS hospitals, I went in when I was 21 to get my tonsils out because I had repeated tonsillitis. It wasn't just for fun. And I went in and they took my tonsils out. And not only did they steal my pants, that's another story. Because apparently they could have gone on fire in the operating theatre. What an excuse to steal someone's pants. They weren't cheap. So anyway, after they stole my pants...
How could they have gone on fire?
Well, the nylon.
Nylon?
What were they doing with fire? How did they take your tonsils out?
Well, they said with all of the oxygen in the room, if there'd been a spark of some kind, we could all have gone up. I just think we
Darling,
like the
pants. Nylon pants, they might have caught fire if you'd run quickly.
The thing is, they were my lucky pants, because I thought I was going to die, so I wore my lucky pants, and I said to the nurse, it's okay if I keep my pants on?
No, that's lucky pants!
So you've got your lucky pants and you've got your pooling pants. You've got two different, and then you've got your normal pants, and then you've got your Sunday pants. God,
the irony of being killed in a bizarre hospital explosion by your lucky pants.
Also, that's only four pairs of pants. How can one of them be the Sunday pants?
I've got other ones. I've just got every day anyway. So I said to the nurse, can I wear my lucky pants? I'm afraid of dying. And she said, oh, yes, there's no problem, Miss Calman. There's no problem at all. And off I went, woke up, no pants. I said, where are my pants? And they said, oh, we don't know. And I went, no, someone's taken my pants. I was still a bit woozy and I suspect I was slightly more aggressive than was necessary. Blood all over me going, where are my pants? Where are my pants? They went missing. Now, here's the problem with the story is... my right tonsil grew back!
Sometimes on this programme I lose the will to live. A joint report from the Royal Colleges of Physicians and of Nursing has said dedicating more time to ward rounds will improve patient care. The report urges doctors to speak more to their patients... That's the last thing you need when you're ill, having somebody banging on about their golf handicap. According to the author of the report, there was a real problem in some hospitals where patients were not treated with respect, he said, using a coma patient as a puppet to demonstrate. 2 points to Jeremy. Francesca, listen to this.
Amazing, Sandy.
Thank you. Next week, Jeremy Hardy sings Madam Butterfly. Francesca, where is it not over until the fat lady takes off her trainers?
I love this. The E&O are trying to encourage normal people to go to the opera by letting them wear jeans and selling beer. Does that suggest that people who go to the opera are abnormal? And you know, how patronising is that of all? Has anyone ever said, I'd really love to go to the opera, but I can't wear my jeans? How about lowering the ticket prices? Am I? I think it's bizarre. I mean, are you going to get the upset? Are you going to get, like, black tie night at Wigan Bingo?
There was the former chairman of the Royal Opera House in 1998. He was asked about the dress code, and he said, I don't want to sit next to somebody in a singlet, a pair of shorts and a smelly pair of trainers, which I think is actually the dress code for Sydney Opera House. That's the... yeah, no,
he sounds a nice bloke. I have a problem with the whole concept of normal anyway. The best answer I ever heard to what's normal is I asked a guy and he said, normal is a cycle on a washing machine.
Only 30% of E&O's current audience is under 44. Makes a news quiz recording look like a crash.
Something for dressing up a little bit. I went to the theatre for the first time in ages recently just to get a bit of culture in that. And me
didn't
and the
rub
went,
off.
Yeah. We went to the theatre and a gentleman sat next to me in a smoking jacket and cravat. And I was so jealous. And we've booked to go to the theatre again and I'm going to wear a cravat because there's very few places you can wear a cravat without people pointing and laughing at you. And I think it should be encouraged because I suit a cravat.
Are you going to wear just a cravat? Because certainly they can't.
Yes, it's a night of experimental theatre. I'll fit right in.
I've been to see a couple of things recently because they are trying to attract a new audience. I went to see Two Boys, did you see that, by Nico Muli? It was very good. Not as good as the Rolf Harris version, but nevertheless.
I saw opera once at Glastonbury, and it was on like the Sunday morning, and so everyone was a terrible mess, and there was this sort of quite large woman in leather hot pants and a horned helmet on top of the stage, belting out a bit of Wagner. And there was this girl standing next to me in the crowd who turned to her boyfriend and said, "Is this Daniel Bedingfield?"
English National Opera has launched the initiative Undress for Opera, where audiences... audiences will be encouraged to come casually dressed. The initiative hopes to draw in a younger audience and will include performances of La Traviata, Don Giovanni and The Death of Peter Andre. Do you know what annoys me? People say opera's snobby. It isn't snobby, it's elitist. Snobby is not a word. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Francesca have got 8 points, but so too have Hugo and Susan. Start round three with a preview of the Jonathan Ross show from the Radio Times.
There are no words to describe Dynamo, the street magician from Bradford.
And our thanks to Chris Worsley for sending us that. Jeremy, who's saying it's not you, it's your mum? Anybody know who's saying it's not you, it's not your mum?
Is it parents trying to split up their kids' relationships?
It is parents trying to split up their kids'
is this
relationships.
News?
No, not really.
No one's ever good enough for your kid, are they?
Well, no, I mean...
Are they, Jeremy?
Well, no, my daughter being a girl, I always wanted to bring her up as a lesbian. I always thought, do I really want some spotty Herbert turning up at my door? She's 22 years old now. It's too late. But what could I have done?
Oh, it's never too late. We accept applications from all ages.
Applications right up until death.
Yes.
What should I have bought her? Golf clubs? A monocle? What's that?
Sandy and I often put our monocles on.
Should point out that after the show, Susan and Sandy will be investigating a murder together.
The thing is, Jeremy, it's very, very confusing because you were her boyfriend. I've got three children and they're all grown up and they're all adults now and they're all straight. And you look at them and think, where have I gone wrong? What's it? I gave them every opportunity, every role model, but no, no.
I'm feeling jealous because I don't have children and I'm not going to have children. It's a choice I've made simply because I don't think I'm an appropriate person to bring children into.
And can I just second that?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's a very honest thing to say. Look, I'm the fun auntie, but as a mother, oh no.
What have you got, Hugo? I can't remember if you've got a boy or a girl.
I have two daughters.
Right.
And actually, speaking as someone with two kids under four, the idea of parents trying to split up their children's relationship would be sort of revenge after, you know, the efforts that children go to break up yours.
I once hid my daughter's mobile phone to scupper a new relationship, and it didn't work because it turned out I'd hidden her iPod. On the plus side, I'm now a big fan of Tiny Temper. So. Research for a new book has revealed that one in three parents have tried to break up their teenagers' romantic relationships. Mums are more likely to actively try to break up their daughters' relationships, while dads are more likely to stick their fingers in their ears and shout, no, 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 not listening, not listening. Surely the easiest way to get rid of your daughter's idiot boyfriend is to say, oh, you know, he reminds me of your father.
My daughter was very, very embarrassed when she brought her boy back and I got out the old naked paddling pool photographs. I don't know why she was embarrassed. I used to look marvellous in a paddling pool. I was all toned and buff and everything.
Just a tiny bit of bile coming up in the back of my throat. You have to let children make their own mistakes unless you live by a cliff. That's a good motto. 2 points to Jeremy. Francesca, who has apologised for a cataloguing error?
Oh, this is the story of in Saudi Arabia, they've airbrushed all the women out of the IKEA catalogue. Didn't realise they sold women over there. No, it's quite shocking. Women aren't allowed to drive or to vote, and they've got to be covered head to toe. Although I never quite got the burqa, because I always thought, instead of covering women from head to toe, apart from their eyes, so that men won't be tempted by them, why don't they just do the inverse and cover men's eyes with a bit of material? Not a judgment, guys. Just it would save a lot of material.
I know quite a lot about IKEA because, of course, I'm Scandinavian, it's in our blood. I can tell you, IKEA is actually, it's a Swedish word, means one piece missing. And I did once model for an IKEA catalogue. I was modelling kitchens. And actually, when I looked at it, I couldn't see myself. I thought they'd airbrushed me out, but I was actually hidden by a very large pedal bin, so...
IKEA is basically virtual reality housing for the dispossessed to just moon around, imagining that they had things. But they open till midnight, and you sort of think, well, I'll beat the rush. I'll go at sort of 10:30. And one night I drove down to the Purley Way. I thought, this is great. The whole store is deserted, not realising that everyone was at the tills. And I was walking around and looking at all the cupboards and everything, and it was like being one of the borrowers, you know, sort of like foraging when the big people weren't there. And I looked in this cupboard and there was a pair of trousers in there. And I thought, and it had a tag on it, and it was a Muji tag, which is a shop for modern metropolitan people. And I thought, well, maybe they've got a deal with Muji. And I thought, well, but they had a price tag. And what I didn't realise was that they were just trying to demonstrate what this wardrobe would look like with new trousers in it. Like a serving suggestion. You think, oh, that's a good idea. Plate and knife and fork, that's wise. So I thought, well, I'll get this pair of trousers. And I walked to the till, and the laughs, every member of staff turning and pointing at the fool who tried to buy the display trousers. And I looked round at them and I wanted to say, but at least I don't work here.
My wife adores, like, I don't know why, and on a Sunday, I'll say, what do you want to do? Say, oh, let's go to IKEA. Oh, and now we're married, I have to say yes to things. And because I didn't before, because I was a free spirit, not now, I'm downtrodden. And she said, let's go to IKEA, and I go, I don't want to go to IKEA. And she says, oh, there's meatballs. And one thing that's very certain about me is I can be easily tempted into doing anything I don't want to do by food. It's like Hansel and Gretel, she goes, there's the meatball season. And I go, oh, I'll have some meatballs then. And then we walk out with 6,000 tea lights. And do you know what? We can't have candles in the flat because I'm frightened of them.
Sorry, are you still wearing those nylon pants? Yeah.
But I had a look at the Saudi Arabian catalogue. It's, as you'd expect, like your regular IKEA catalogue, except all the writing's in Arabic. And I was thinking, do they have those peculiar Swedish words in Arabic? And if so, do they worry at all about what they mean? Because I thought maybe this could be why they had to remove a woman from that particular picture, because maybe, you know, hulvuken means, you know, sort of sodomise me with a loofah or something. No one's looked into this.
That would be the one Swedish word you know. IKEA has apologised for airbrushing women out of some photos in its Saudi Arabian catalogue. In Saudi Arabia, women appear infrequently in adverts due to technical reasons, it being almost impossible to photograph someone who has to stand behind you. It's the worst cataloguing error since Amazon listed 50 Shades of Grey as a children's colouring book. 2 points to Francesca. Hugo, listen to this. Hugo, why does absence make her heart grow fonder than his?
This, I think, is another one of those surveys. They asked husbands and wives what they wanted to do with their spare time. Mm. And something like one in three husbands wanted to spend all their spare time with their wives, but only one in five wives wanted to spend their time with their husbands. Which sounded to me like an excellent argument for bigamy, frankly. Does it make the maths work out just right? I think.
To be fair, the report is unclear about whose wives the husbands want to spend time with.
Well, also, when men say they want to spend time with their wives, they don't really mean they want to spend time with their wives. They mean they want to spend time at home, in the shed. And their wives are there.
They mean they've just been forced to resign, having called police officers a pleb or something like that.
The survey was something like eHarmony or something, dating
expert. Dating,
yeah. It analysed lots of parts of the relationship. And my favourite part was it said that one out of three men wanted to get married for companionship, which is exactly the same as getting a Labrador, essentially. It's essentially saying, well, I'm allergic to pets, so I got a wife instead.
You're going to get a fairly skewed survey of marriages anyway if you conduct it via a dating website, surely. I mean, the people who sort of are on a dating website and are married are perhaps not going to have...
It's quite niche, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it shows that one out of three men are liars and women are more honest.
That may be. According to the thing, couples spend 11 hours a week watching television together and 3 hours a week engaged in romantic activities. 3 hours? Do you think that includes stripping and washing the bed linen? Gay people were not included in this survey, and that's because we don't have spare time, what with all the clubbing and dungaree shopping.
Not attractive, is it? Because, I mean, surely you want somebody to love you but also be able to function without you. But you can tell, if you read Lonely Hearts adverts, they say things like, older gentleman, 55, seeks female companion, 21 to 23, for conversation, laughs and long-term nursing assistance.
I put in a personal ad. I lied on it. I said I liked fine wine and classical music and just rubbish. I said I was 5'7" or something like that. I just lied. And I got a genuine reply from someone, and it was frightening. A woman phoned me up and said, my name's Brenda. I've just got out of prison. I'm currently unemployed. And this was the nicest thing she said. It means I've got a lot more time to spend loving you.
Wow.
Yeah, we only been out a few times.
See, I think the problem is men see marriage as a way of gaining companionship and women see marriage as a way of reaching things in tall cupboards.
Men and women are different in the respect that a man meets a woman and thinks, you're perfect, I want you, I just want you, I want you, I love everything about you, I want you, and I want you to just be in my life forever. Whereas women see men as more of a project, really, don't they? Well, I could knock through there, I could break that spirit, you know.
I'm a bit of a romantic, and I met my boyfriend in Dublin 6 years ago, and because I love Irish and I love the accent. And it was funny because when we got together, quite a few people did say, wow, it's amazing that you're going out with someone different. Well done. I said, he's only Irish.
A survey about marriage for a dating website found that only a fifth of wives would like to spend all their spare time with their partners compared to a third of husbands. The survey found that a third of women would find their husbands annoying if they were around all the time, whilst the remaining two-thirds already found their husbands annoying, regardless of how much they saw them. The survey suggested that couples feel most happy on Friday evenings. So can I just say, if you're listening on Friday and you're in a couple, this is as good as it gets. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings. The teams have brought along Mr. Hardy.
Sandra, I am indebted to Barry Dolan, who has found this press clipping in some paper in Gloucestershire. It says, the sky above the cricket ground is set to light up on Sunday the 1st of November with a spectacular fireworks display. The evening will include two fireworks displays, one especially aimed at children.
Ms. Martinez.
This is from Chris Lee from the Mail on Sunday. And it says, British Gas smart meters will cut bills by £65 a year as long as you use less power.
Mr. Rifkin.
This is sent in by Steve Linehan, and it's from the London Metro. It's from the Good Deed feed column, in which people thank people for nice things they've done for them. And it says, thank you to my fellow commuters after I was taken ill on Wednesday at Fenchurch Street. Various people helped me upstairs, gave me water, and made me smile with kind words. I'm only sorry that my sick bag turned out not to be water-resistant.
Ms. Kalman.
This is from Peter Starling, and it's from the Lymington Times. Just under 3,000 runners braved torrential rain for the 30th anniversary New Forest Marathon, and despite several cases of hypothermia and the leader of the half marathon being led the wrong way, organisers hailed it a great success.
Let's take a look at the final scores. Jeremy and Francesca have got 12 points, but following a quick recalculation by the Department of Transport, this week's winners are Hugo and Susan with 13. Before we leave you, here is a notice from the Evesham Journal sent in by Archie Hillen.
At a recent meeting, Broadway parish councillors tabled a motion to celebrate the opening of new public toilets in the village activity park.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra with Jeremy Hardy, Francesca Martinez, Hugo Rifkind and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script was written by Rodri Crooks, Lucy Clark and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Tom Neenan, Nadia Kamal and Alice Gregg. The producer was Alexandra Smith.